Good afternoon, Eileen. When you called Cancer Action, you were looking for answers to the question of why so many members of your family had gotten cancer. Let's talk about your family and the cancers it has suffered.
Oh, sure. And it wasn't just my family. There were just so many members on my street. And, you know, little bells were starting to go off. There's a problem. In my household, there was four people, my mother, my father, myself, and my sister. My mom and dad were diagnosed. My mom was diagnosed of July 1993, my dad July 1996. Mom with breast cancer, dad with colon cancer. When my dad was diagnosed, he was stage 2. At that time, my mom was stage 4. They used to go and get chemo together. At that time, nobody had ever heard of a husband and wife coming in to get chemo at the same time. It was quite unusual. Unfortunately, that's no longer the fact. I was diagnosed in November of 2005. Lost my mother to breast cancer October of 1996. Lost my dad to colon cancer January of 1999. So it wasn't long after their deaths that I was diagnosed. Next door neighbor had also been diagnosed in the early 80s with cancer, not sure of the kind, and the neighbor next to them, he died in the 1970s of cancer. A friend of my parents who lived around the corner also passed away from cancer. So there, I thought, was a lot of people just in one square block, and these are just the people that I'm aware of. You know, neighbors come and go. I don't know what happened, you know, further down the line. My family moved from Queens, New York in 1986. I stayed on and didn't leave until 1987.
So how long was your family living in Queens?
We moved from the Bronx to Queens in 1971, and then my parents moved to New Jersey in 1986. I stayed in Queens and then ended up moving to Brooklyn. And I left Brooklyn in 1991.
Yeah, one of the really interesting things that's coming out of all this cancer and all the research that's going into it is that people are beginning to realize that the exposures that really matter are the ones that take place, say, you know, in that time period, say 10, 20 years before the cancers develop and are clinically, you know, diagnosable. This is, you know, going to make a huge difference when people start thinking, you know, it doesn't do any good to measure the levels of a pollutant carcinogen in the body at the time that the cancer is diagnosed, because that's not the exposure that caused it.
Yeah.
You have to be able to look back somehow, and that's, you know, it's a real problem because there just is no data. There hasn't been very much biomonitoring at all. You know, there are no serum samples to test that were taken, say, years before. There's nothing. And, you know, it's very frustrating, but we're just kind of trying to work our way through this and eventually understand cancer better. What is it like to encounter cancer and not know what caused it?
Well, you know, having both parents been diagnosed with cancer, the fact that I had cancer was not a shock. What shocked me was the age. My mom passed away a month before her 55th birthday. My dad had just turned 65. I turned 40 on Saturday. I found my lump the following Friday. That's what alarmed me the most, was the age. Since then, I've encountered quite a few people, actually, in Queens. Thankfully, you know, through the internet, places like MySpace and classmates and all, around my age, who have also been diagnosed with breast cancer, no family history. In my family, my mother was the first one diagnosed with breast cancer. Her mother did not have breast cancer, none of her aunts, none of her cousins. My mom's sister is still alive. She's never had cancer. She will be 79 years old this summer. But I'm finding people in my age bracket know history, and they've also grown up, you know, in Queens. And I'm just finding, like, I wish there was little push pins that we could, you know.
Yeah.
Well, there was a diagnosis here, there was a diagnosis here, there was a lot of diagnoses here. I know out in Long Island, there are hot spots, but I'm finding it's not just Long Island.
Right.
It's, you know, also Queens. There's a problem, and what I initially went looking for was, I really thought there was going to be, you know, cancer hotspot website, you know, Brooklyn, Queens, Nassau, Suffolk, and, you know, maybe little X's or dots of how many people within a square mile or 10 square miles, and the cancers, you know, maybe a pink dot for breast cancer, different colors, you know, to represent the different kinds of cancer. That's a lot of cancer just in within the people that I know who say we all went to the same church, and each parish, I guess, is what, one square mile. For that area, there's a lot of people, and there's got to be an explanation for this.
Right. And as far as I know, the only kind of information that you would have been able to find along the lines of what you're looking for are these zip code level cancer data maps that don't really give a fine enough focus, because the zip code is a pretty darn big area unless it's a really heavily populated area.
See, in the zip code I was in, there's three dots that would be missing. My parents were diagnosed after they left Queens, so was I. My parents left, they moved to New Jersey. I left, I moved to Virginia. So it's not that we all left and then moved to the same area again. We moved to different areas. So the exposure had to have been then.
Yep.
It had to have.
Yep. Well, that was a time of these apartment building incinerators burning the tenants' trash. And what that would have done to your neighborhood, based on a lot of good science and a lot of, you know, testing of the environment around solid waste incinerators throughout the world, those apartment building incinerators were actually lower tech than, you know, what many of these municipal solid waste incinerators were, and yet there's this matter, this result of burning the trash and using, you know, this kind of technology, it contaminated your neighborhood with dioxins and metal carcinogens. Did you have a garden there?
We did. My dad liked to garden. My dad was born in Ireland, so, you know, he was raised on a farm and all. And interestingly enough, the neighbor, the one to the right, and they had lived in the house much longer than we had. They were older than us. They had been there, oh my gosh, 20 years longer than us. And she had pictures of the area before it had been developed. And where we lived, the house to the left was the main farmhouse. This was a farm. And they had a massive line of garages in the back. I think she had six or seven that she used to rent out. And interestingly enough, to people who lived on the apartment on the corner, that used to be a barn. So where all these houses were used to be a farm in the 1930s, 40s. Before the houses were built.
Well, that time period, it really does ring bells. The World War II was a time when there just started to be so much more chemical use. It was this explosion of chemical development, chemical use, and from then it just went wild. It just kept building and building as it builds now, with more and more chemical use, more and more contamination from the chemicals, and then the bad result of people being exposed to those chemicals and developing these diseases.
Well, I often wonder what was in the ground.
Yep.
You know, what was in the ground. Sometimes, you know, he would be turning over the soil and, you know, what once had been a metal fence, you know, would have been down in there. And if we even tried to do now what was done in the 70s, we would be arrested and fined, and rightfully so. people were just dumping things everywhere. I mean, there's warnings now on using plastic in the microwave. People were taking this, and like you're saying, with these incinerators, just throwing them, just tossing everything down. When the incinerators would burn, because there were, obviously, I mean, in New York City, and there's apartment buildings everywhere, you can smell it. You could smell when an incinerator was burning. And I remember my mom saying, you know, oh, that would be the incinerator from that apartment building. But, you know, what was thrown down there? Now you recycle, and there's even things you're not supposed to put in a recycle bin. You have to dispose of things, paint cans and stuff.
Yeah, I can just imagine burning all that.
Yeah, yeah, car batteries. I'm not talking cell phones that weren't around in the 70s. You know, paint cans, and paint had lead in it.
Yep.
So where did all this stuff go?
Up into the air and then back down to the ground and into people's bodies.
Yeah. That was the big thing in the 80s. Remember acid rain?
Yep.
You don't hear anything about that anymore.
Yeah, there's just been so many environmental problems that came along, were given some consideration for a short time, and then fell by the wayside, so to speak, because another environmental problem came along that was bigger and worse, and
right.
Or maybe they just decided to quit working on the one because they didn't want to, you know, irritate industry anymore. Or, you know, probably a million reasons involved, but we do see this. I will not be convinced by, you know, the propaganda from Washington and the states that there's been any significant improvements in the quality of the environment. Not from what I see, not from what I know of, you know, how business operates and how government operates and how people get sick and all these things. I'm not convinced at all that there have been any improvements yet, Eileen.
No, there haven't. In fact, down here in Chesapeake, Virginia, a golf course was built recently, and there's a huge lawsuit about that. They used fly ash, which you're not supposed to do, and they did it to build this golf course, and people are getting sick. I wonder what happened to all of the tires from the 1960s, 70s, 80s, all these car batteries. I mean, many times a car, you wanted to get rid of it, sometimes they just dumped it in a river.
Right.
So, you know, what happened then?
Exactly. Just poisoned a little bit more of our earth here.
Well, you poison the fish, but they tell you eat fish, fish is healthy.
Yep.
You pull a fish out, it's got more growths on it than you can count.
Yeah, I wouldn't be eating the fish from most of the waters. The way I read it, the New York State Department of Health, one of the few things that New York State DOH does that's any good as far as cancer prevention goes that addresses pollutant carcinogens, they do publish a fishing advisory. It's called Chemicals, right? Chemicals in Sport, Fish, and Game. And they're telling women and girls of childbearing age, don't eat any of the fish from the waters of New York State. Well, it's because of what we're talking about right here.
Yeah, exactly.
Federal, state, and local governments do little more than nothing to educate the public about dioxins and cancer risk. How do you feel about government silence on this whole subject of pollutant exposure cancer risk?
Well, you know, it's not only government silence, but you have groups like the FDA who, and I mean, this has been going on very heavily in the last 5-10 years. Everybody gets a prescription for something, and then, ooh, it's pulled off the market. I mean, the latest was Tantrix to stop smoking. That was supposed to be the latest and greatest. Now there's lawsuits. So what are they regulating? These are the people that have okayed medications for doctors to give us, and people are dying from that, or medical procedures, and people are dying from that. So I'm very, very leery of what they do and of course, what they're not doing. I think both of them are very heavily linked. There's studies saying a lot of prescription medications have been flushed down the toilet. Now they're in our drinking water. There's links to that as well. Why they're not doing anything, you know, when you're sleeping with the enemy, what do you do?
There you go.
When you're sleeping with the enemy, what the heck do you do?
And they're not only sleeping with them, they're eating with them and
doing
everything they could possibly get done with them.
Oh, yeah.
Sharing their bank accounts with them.
You got it.
Yeah.
You got it. And, you know, you just turn the other way. There has got to be a rational explanation as to why certain areas, you know, in Queens, we're not even hearing Queens anymore. We're always hearing Long Island. I know the Baldwin family, Mrs. Baldwin, you know, had breast cancer. And when that she was diagnosed, we heard a lot about these pockets out in Long Island of breast cancer, of women and young women, 30s and 40s, being diagnosed with breast cancer. Well, Queens is really on Long Island, as is Brooklyn. It's one end, and, you know, Nassau and Suffolk are the other end. That got hushed real quickly. We don't hear about these pockets anymore. There are areas that don't have as much cancer as these areas. And why isn't it being addressed? Is it a real estate thing? Oh, nobody will move to New York? The realtors squashed it?
Maybe do not know.
To know that, you know, in this area of Long Island or in this area of Queens, there's a high rate of cancer. I know in New Jersey, they do radon testing in the basement.
All I know that has been done by government to start looking at some of these, like these hot spots of cancer, as we're describing them. On Long Island, they did this thing called the Long Island Breast Cancer Study, and that found an association, the one association they found, you know, the one chemical link they found between exposure and cancer, breast cancer, was they found that these PAHs, they're polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, that there were larger numbers of addicts of those chemicals in the, you know, the tissue with the biomonitoring of these women that had the breast cancer than with the women that didn't. So there was this direct association between PAH exposure and breast cancer risk. That was it for the Long Island, you know, breast cancer study. That was the one pollutant that they focused on. Well, PAHs, they're in exhaust. They are in the releases of industries that have any kind of combustion going on. There are a lot of PAHs, you know, that are known human carcinogens, some that are suspected. It's a big group of chemical compounds of a similar nature. They persist in the environment. They're relatively potent. It's just, you know, it's this whole big problem with the PAHs alone. And how much has been done on that? I can't say. It's hard to assess.
And I wonder, like, the validity of these tests. A lot of people, Long Island, have started in Brooklyn or they started in Queens.
Right.
And then they move on. Like I said, if you were to mark the area where I grew up, you're going to have three less because we left. We weren't diagnosed there. I believe we were exposed there. It's like, you know, everybody covers their kids in sunscreen now. Well, in the 70s, we didn't do that. And, of course, you know, everybody was getting checked for skin cancer because skin cancer rose. Well, now, all right, we put sunscreen on before we go outside because we know the exposure happened when we were younger. Well, the exposure to this happened when I was younger. I think all of us were exposed, you know, at the same time.
And you were exposed even younger than that, truly, because you were exposed in utero. This, one of the best results that I've seen with our Cancer Action Group, this Cancer Action New York group that I am the director of, we've been recently making, you know, forging our connections with someone in government who we are hopeful about for a change. It's Dr. Linda Birnbaum. She has been involved with two really powerful papers, research papers, that present this story of dioxin exposure being a risk factor for breast cancer. You know, any dioxin exposure, whether it's in the adult or in the uterus or in the young, but this dioxin exposure being at risk for breast cancer. The one study linked adult exposure to dioxins took place in Seveso, Italy, when a factory exploded and sprinkled dioxins over the whole, you know, countryside. There was a direct association between increased breast cancer risk and the exposure of the adult women that were in that area and that were studied, you know, subsequently. another paper that Dr. Birnbaum actually was a co-author on with Suzanne Fenton, another person in EPA, they found that when rats were exposed to dioxins and then their offspring were evaluated for the amount of cancer they developed, that more rats got cancer when they were exposed in utero to dioxins. They did other studies where they found that the actual breast tissue of the rats, the, you know, that rat offspring that were in gestation and were in the uterus when the dioxin exposure took place and also had lactational exposures, because the same mother that, you know, they were exposed to dioxin in being in her womb, they also were exposed to dioxins further when they nursed and drank her breast milk.
Right.
Well, these rats, these young rats, their breast tissue did not develop as normal rat breast tissue normally develops. And based on the type of morphology that was seen, it was hypothesized that this kind of breast development would predispose the young rat to developing cancer later on. And that's what explained that first study I talked to you about, you know, saying that, you know, the rats got more cancer when they were exposed to a known carcinogen once they'd had the dioxin exposure in the womb. That's, you know, that's possibly an explanation of why you are finding that younger women are getting cancer now, because the exposure that caused their mother to get cancer caused them to be predisposed to get cancer in the womb. And so you started out with your, you know, breast cancer risk elevated compared to your mother there.
Yeah, I wish that, you know, there would be a site where, you know, have you had breast cancer? Yeah, you know, could you please list all of the areas, you know, just zip code wise, where did you live? What, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Compile that and start to go, oh, wait a minute, because, you know, people migrate. being diagnosed in Virginia, you would think, well, okay, that's a Virginia, but it's not, because
right.
I haven't lived in Virginia even half of my life. Most of my life was in New York City. And back then, New York City was not the cleanest place. I mean, you know, the jokes about the East River and, you know, being able to walk across it and stuff, because it was filthy.
Well, I don't know where this is going to go to. We're just hoping that, I'm really hopeful that government will start telling the truth about this. Carl Grossman, a Long Island resident, and his wife now has ovarian cancer, he wrote a book way back in 1983 about the horrible record that Ronald Reagan and his administration had on wrecking the little bit of pollution protection that the American public had in terms of the Clean Air Act and the some of these other federal laws that set up programs like FDA and administrations like OSHA, all these various little these steps that could have helped us be in a better situation right now. Well, the Reagan administration wrecked a lot of that, and Bush, you know, this book was written in the Reagan era. If another book was written in the Bush era, it'd be the same story all over again, and now, you know, just another further down the road of not having government protection from pollution. This poison conspiracy book is a must read for anyone who's experiencing cancer, anyone who wants to make a difference on this and create some pollution prevention that will really, you know, benefit the public and help get these cancer rates back down where, you know, we can live with them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to say. You know, we're just hopeful that change is in the wind. I believe in people giving what they love the most to bring in change. And so what I do is I dance and I read poetry. And I was down on the Corning Tower, and I'm sure you know where that is, the Corning Tower and the Empire State Plaza there in Albany with the New York State Center of Government. Well, this Corning Tower is the home, the house of the New York State Department of Health. And I was reading poetry that was basically attacking DOH back probably 10 years ago on their record, you know, just calling out for them to start telling the people what is causing the cancer and tell the whole story, not just that it's cigarette smoking, that it's partly cigarette smoking and partly exposure to pollutant carcinogens like dioxins and benzene and formaldehyde and PAHs and all these pollutants that are in our water. Yeah, everything. And in the ground, like you're saying, the lead and the metals that have been dumped in the ground and some of these organic compounds that are persist and stay there too. Well, I was dancing and... And this security guard came along, and, you know, that's his job, and I honor them for doing their work, but it was really cool, Eileen. You know, we didn't talk about him kicking me out of there, because he didn't kick me out. What we talked about was the fact he asked me what I was reading the poetry about, and I explained to him. You know, so cool. Once we started talking, he told me this story, and I've just got to tell it to you. So that his wife had been diagnosed with breast cancer.
Oh, wow.
Yep, it was really just this very powerful period of time there, a moment there with him. Said his wife had been diagnosed with breast cancer and that she stopped eating all animal foods. Just started, you know, eating vegetables only,